Hi. Let me start off by thanking the organizers of this event for inviting me. Unfortunately, I've tried to be with you in real time, but you know the story with electricity in Gaza. And let me start directly by addressing some of the questions sent to me when I was when I got the invitation. And the first question was about the situation in Gaza right now. We know that Israel declared a unilateral ceasefire after pounding the Palestinians of Gaza with airstrikes for 11 days. And you know that this war plunged the Gaza Strip even deeper into suffering already inflicted by a hermetic, and I would call it genocidal. I know how sensitive this word is, but I would call it genocidal. My friend Ilan Pappé calls the blockade, an incremental genocide. When the siege was declared in 2007, I remember Richard Falk wrote a piece titled "Prelude to Genocide." So we are back to square one right now. The hermetic siege imposed by apartheid Israel and the United States of America. I mean, without the support of the United States of America, Israel wouldn't, be able to impose this this siege. And there are political and military consequences. And the point is that there is an urgent need for activists such as yourselves, activists around the world, to take up the struggle against Israel's apartheid the same way they took the struggle against the inhumane apartheid system of South Africa until it crumbled in 1994 with the election of Nelson Mandela as the first black president of multiracial, multireligious, multicultural South Africa. And this is an indication of, the future that we are hoping to have in Palestine. I mean, very clearly, and I know Jeff is there as well. I mean, we are members of the One State campaign. We are calling for, a secular democratic state in the on the in the historic land of Palestine, because the reality on the ground here between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean is a one-state reality controlled by apartheid Israel. With us Palestinians, being oppressed by apartheid Israel, the same way, if not worse, than the way the oppressed Africans of South Africa were treated in, under the inhuman apartheid system. And these are not my words, by the way. I mean, I myself spent 6, 7 years in South Africa after the collapse of the apartheid system. But I have had all these discussions with anti-apartheid activists who decided to come and visit Palestine, from, Ronnie Cassels to Archbishop Desmond Tutu, I mean, including Nelson Mandela himself, all said to me, and they wrote about it, by the way, that what we are witnessing in Palestine is far worse than what they had to go through under the apartheid system. And so let me just take you back to the ceasefire, which was declared because simply Israel failed to achieve any of its objectives. Yes, destruction, yes. Killed so many people, including 69 children, yes. More than 200 people, including 69 children and, 39 women, yes. Because Israel knows that it can carry out war crimes and crimes against humanity with full impunity. It did this in 2009, 2008, 2009, for 22 days, bombarding Gaza with phosphorus bombs, with internationally prohibited weapons. And, It achieved absolutely nothing at the time. But the point is that the international community did absolutely nothing. And because the international community did absolutely nothing, apartheid Israel felt that it could come back, attack Gaza again in 2012 for a week, killing 200 people, and then leaving Gaza. Just like that. And then the international community did absolutely nothing. And therefore, Israel felt that, with that kind of impunity, it can come back 2014 for 51 days, relentless attacks against the civilians of the Gaza Strip. I mean, look, I witnessed those, four massacres, 2009, 2012, 2014, and 2021, and the Great March of Return. In 2014, for 51 days, Israel attacked with phosphorus bombs, navy, air, etc., land, killing more than 2,200 people, including 434 children. Just like that. Just like that. And every single person who died has a family, has a name, has a story to tell. Has a story to tell. And this is why Israel can just attack and then declare a ceasefire. So the ceasefire was declared because Israel felt the point is that we had to show resistance. I mean, Michel Foucault said, well, wherever you have power, and I think Edward Said repeated it, you have resistance. And so Israel, yes, declared a ceasefire because, honestly, it failed to achieve any of its objectives, namely destroying our will to fight, our steadfastness, sumud, resistance in Gaza. And because, people keep asking me, why is Israel besieging Gaza? Why is Israel targeting Gaza? Because Gaza is a refugee camp. Two-thirds of Gazans are refugees entitled to their right of return in accordance with United Nations Resolution 194. That's what happened in 1948, a process of ethnic cleansing. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians came to Gaza. Now we have 8 refugee camps. The majority of Gazans are refugees. And therefore, they are a reminder of the original sin, the Nakba, the catastrophe that took place in 1948. And that is the essence of Israel's settler colonialism and apartheid, because one of the questions is about, whether Israel is an apartheid state or not. Human Rights Watch said it. B'Tselem, Israel's mainstream human rights organization, said it. United Nations Esquire report said it, that Israel is an apartheid state. And then 3 years ago, Israel, passed a law. The Israeli Knesset passed a law. The nation state basic law stating that Israel is a state of Jews only. So Israel is the state of Jews. And Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel is not the state of its citizens. So Israel, because of what happened in 2014, because the international community was, and I still remains, complicit. And when I say international community, I'm not talking about international civil society. I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about conscientious people. I'm not talking about civil society. I'm talking about the official bodies of the international community. And again, last month in May, they decided to come because, they can do that. They can just come, attack Gaza, and leave. But this time, we showed more resistance. But before I come to that, we are, as I said, we are back to square one, and we will fight in order to change the status quo. And we are fighting to change the status quo. But we still have a 24-hour surveillance by Israeli drones. I can hear the drone right now as I'm speaking to you, flying overhead. We still hear the F-16s, American-made F-16s, Apache helicopters. And by the way, if I look outside my window here, I can see the gunship in the Mediterranean. And I don't know whether to call that, commitment to ceasefire or not. What kind of ceasefire are we talking about? I mean, we have to go back to square one, where, we do not have electricity, and this is why I cannot have this conversation in real time with you, where there's a long list of banned items. And if I start telling you what we have on that banned, items on the net, it's a joke. From chocolate to cigarettes to cows to pasta, let alone medicines and essential things. I mean, Dov Vaslav, the advisor to the late Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, he wanted to put us on diet. He wanted, to count, to measure the calories that Israel would allow us to consume. I mean, to that extent. But, I mean, we decided, as I said, to resist. And enough is enough. Enough is enough. What we want, I mean, very simple thing. We issued a statement at the beginning of the latest massacre, as we usually do. Every single time there is a massacre, we issue statements. And the call is very clear. BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions. We want you to boycott apartheid Israel the same way you boycotted the apartheid system of South Africa. It is a moral obligation. And we want the international community to divest from Israel and from companies, international companies benefiting from Israel's multi-tiered system of oppression of the Palestinian people, occupation of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, settler colonialism, actually, apartheid and ethnic cleansing. And we want Security Council and United Nations to impose sanctions. I mean, in accordance with international law, to impose sanctions. We want a military embargo. We want a military embargo to be imposed on apartheid Israel. And, I mean, after and during the latest massacre, some serious questions have been raised. And once again, of course, about, the usefulness of resistance and whether, the outcome of the latest war on Gaza can or cannot be considered a victory for the Palestinian people. And as I said, the same questions every single time Gaza, or rather Israel, attacks Palestinians, people raise the same questions. Even during the Great March of Return, because people kept and still are talking about, the price Palestinians have to pay, especially liberals. And once again, we are being challenged by, those same neutral voices that keep talking about, two sides of the story. I mean, the American president, when Israel was slaughtering children, attacking residential towers, wiping out entire families, the American president said, he supports Israel's right to self-defense. And what about our children? They don't even have that right, by the way. So still people, liberal voices, Western governments are blaming the two sides of the conflict. I mean, there was no conflict in South Africa. There was no conflict in the American South under the Jim Crow laws. Things were black and white, were clear. This is a settler colonial system oppressing the indigenous population of Palestine. So you don't have, two equal sides. You have colonizer and colonized. And every single time they say, you should stop resistance, whether it is BDS because that is anti-Semitism, or even launching, firecrackers, cold rockets by the resistance movement in the Gaza Strip. But once again, we need to be clear. When you raise such questions, that means you accept Israel's narrative that there are two sides to the conflict with equal military power and moral standing. And that is immoral. That is unfair. Now, people who raise these questions reject the reality that this is a Western-backed settler colonialist and apartheid project implanted in the heart of the Middle East, which the Palestinian people are resisting. The same voices also ignore all our moral weapons, that we are the natives of the land, that we have international law supporting our claims, including the claim to the land and our right of return and compensation, that we have the moral high ground, exactly like Black South Africans, like African Americans living in the American South under the Jim Crow laws. And we increasingly have the support of international civil society, as you know by now, and others. And you know, people keep, you know, those liberal voices keep referring, you know, to Palestinian violence, especially in the latest confrontation, you know, last month. And they refuse to see that the Palestinians are able to be agents of change in their present and future. So those people who, you know, talk about the two equal sides and blame the victim, they are ideologically unable to acknowledge Palestinian agency because they refuse to respect the will of the people as expressed in the popular support given to resistance, given to BDS, given to popular resistance in Sheikh Jarrah, in Lud, in Yafa, in Haifa, you know, resistance in its various forms. And as I said, in Gaza, the West Bank, and in 1948. And I think, you know, it is important to to understand that Gaza 2000, or rather Gaza, what happened in Gaza last week, I want to reach the conclusion that it is a victory, because for so many reasons, of course, because one, Israel, failed to achieve any of its objectives, but it also, what happened is that we managed to destroy, you know, some of the myths created by apartheid Israel over the time, that, you know, Israel has the most moral army in the world, that its Iron Dome, for example, is invincible, that the Palestinians are, you know, just Arabs, not even Palestinians, that Arabs that have no common identity and would give up their claim to the land once the old generation, you know, dies out. It is, and I think, you know, we have managed to prove that we are agents of change. Our BDS call is very clear. And honestly, being a BDS activist, I have always, since the inception of the movement, believed that BDS, yes, it is a tool of struggle, tool of solidarity with the Palestinian people, but at the same time, it has managed to decolonize the Palestinian mind. It has managed to decolonize the Palestinian mind. And our victory last month has managed to solidify that idea that we, all of us, whether in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, that is to say the areas occupied in 1967 or in 1948, or Palestinian refugees living in the diaspora, we are one people. I mean, Since the signing of the Oslo, the disastrous and catastrophic Oslo Accords in 1993, you know, our official leadership and apartheid Israel and America wanted to convince us that Palestinians of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip are the Palestinian people. In other words, Oslo has managed to reduce the Palestinian people only to those who, you know, living in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. But hey, with what happened in Jerusalem, in Gaza, in Lod, in Haifa, we are turning, you know, turning the table over, upside down. And we are saying, no, let's go back to 1948 with the establishment of apartheid Israel, not to 1967, when Israel decided to occupy the rest of Palestine, 22% of historic Palestine. And I think what happened is that we've managed to redefine the Palestinian people, to redefine the Palestinian people, and again, bring back the three components of the Palestinian people to say, look, this is the Palestinian people. 12 to 14 million people living in historic Palestine and in the diaspora. So what do we want now? We know that Israel is going to come back. Yes, the answer came from Haifa, Lod, Jerusalem, Sheikh Jarrah. That is irreversible. That is irreversible. And this is why we need a program that represents the three components of the Palestinian people, 1967, 1948, and refugees living in the diaspora. And to my mind, the only solution, the only program that can represent the interests of the Palestinian people in its entirety is the one-state solution. A secular democratic state, a state for all of its citizens, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of ethnicity, etc. And I honestly think it's a compromise. And it's a very generous compromise offered by the colonized to the colonizer. I mean, what is wrong, politically speaking, with the offer, with the generous offer given by the blacks of South, by Nelson Mandela, to the whites of South Africa. As much as I'm critical of the solution in South Africa in terms of the socio-economic, you know, dimension, economic apartheid, etc., but still, I mean, we want equality for all. Equality for all. Getting rid of the privileges of the settlers, getting rid of Jewish supremacy, and establishing a new reality, a new space between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean to replace the colonial space created by apartheid Israel. And I honestly think that we Palestinians have begun to decolonize, as I said, our minds away from the facade of the two-state solution, the racist two-state solution, the peace industry, and with our sumud, we have managed to establish a new reality, and we have brought the arrogant Zionist regime in Palestine to its knees. Thank you again. Thank you so much for being patient with me. And again, I have to apologize for not being able to join you. Thank you.